Now we move to the Housing Diversity DPA. We've already discussed the fact that conflict of interest concerns are largely averted because of the fact that this is just the decision to send things out for community consultation. And secondly, for just about every one of us, the fact is there would be a substantial class of persons concerned. So it's a bit like passing the budget when there's actually something that probably affects everybody, but we don't pick it out because it's there for the whole city. Right, now I think from the agenda we received, there's been a slight change to include this clarification about it being for public consultation. You see that in red on the screen. What I'm suggesting is that we suspend standing orders to go through each of the issues to see what the appropriate motion should be, and then we can determine whether to move motions one by one or in fact move one comprehensive motion at the end of the discussion. Now, let's look first at... can someone move that standing orders be suspended? Councillor Pryor, second. Councillor Gard, is that agreed to? Raise your hand if you agree. Those against? Yes, that is agreed to. So we deal first with proposed amendments to Residential Character Policy 17, expansion of the policy to include new localities, Plimpton Park, South Plimpton, Glendore, Edwardstown, amendment to reduce minimum site dimensions in certain suburbs, as detailed in Appendix 4. For those of you who are following it, there's a discussion on page 25 about the Residential Character Policy Area 17, as they call it. On pages 36 to 72, you get into the technical stuff, describing what is and isn't allowed in the area, with some discussion and some examples. Pages 73 to 77 describe the technical requirements, including minimum site areas, etc., as well as the principles of development control. Perhaps we could have from staff just a very short outline of what this is trying to achieve. And I should say, what's proposed is, let's just check, is this entirely what has come out of the Urban Planning Committee? Or is this where, I notice on in one section there's a suggested amendment which has a graded kind of step back into character area from the suburban activity node zone or something. Does that come up here or does that come up later? So I'm after a bit of staff advice on that.
Through the Mayor, a brief overview of what's being proposed here is to expand the existing Residential Character Policy Area 17 to include new localities that were originally considered back in 2013. And those localities were two in Edwardstown, one in Plimpton Park, and one in Glandore. As a result of recent investigations over the past year, there's also been another locality included in South Plimpton. Yes, all of these localities were considered and supported by the Urban Planning Committee. Your third question about the interface with the Suburban Activity Node Zone. A transition area was considered, but at the Urban Planning Committee it was resolved not to proceed with a formal transition area, but rather to include building interface provisions to achieve appropriate transitioning down toward lower density areas.
Excellent. Thank you for the summary. Any questions, concerns? Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, can I just add a point to that, just for the record, that we, at the Urban Planning Committee, we decided not to include a transition area because that would eat into the character area. That was the reason behind that, or the main reason behind that.
Sure. All right. Look, if there aren't other concerns, we can just move on to the second point. The proposed amendments to the local centre zone and neighbourhood centre zone detailed in appendices 5 and 6 and expanding the neighbourhood centre zone in Parkholm, appendix 7. So, the discussion generally is on pages 25 and 26, if members wish to look at that. The local centre zone, appendix 5, that's on page 78. And the neighbourhood centre zone on page 82. And again, these are the sort of technical changes which are promoting the high street styles, shop frontages, and so on. And Oakland's estate analysis. Page 90 onwards is Appendix 7. And for the... Yeah. So, anyone, any questions, comments, concerns? Okay. There was an informal briefing last night. I think many councillors probably had their questions answered then. Once again, if I could briefly ask staff to describe the intent of the changes here. Ms. Hardy? For those items covered in Motion 2,
So, in relation to Resolution 2, it talks about amending the existing local centre zone and neighbourhood centre zone. At present, those zones encourage dwellings only where in association with non-residential uses, and this amendment proposes to clarify that they're encouraged above non-residential ground floor uses. We're also looking at imposing maximum and minimum building heights. So we're envisaging a maximum of 4 storeys in neighbourhood centres and 2 storeys in local centres. And it also deals with an expansion to the Parkholm Neighbourhood Centre to encompass residential properties on the southern side of Chambers Street in Marion, where they are adjacent to the neighbourhood centre zone.
All right, we'll move on. The Marion Plains Policy Area 13. You'll see the description, which in a sense accounts for the changes on page 26 of your agenda. So this is where, I mean, in a sense it's a Save Our Suburbs package to increase minimum frontage, etc., so that we have less of the car park problem currently experienced in some of our northern suburbs of the city of Marion. You'll see the full table there about the policy solution. And for those who wish to go to it, the draft policy is Appendix 8, that's starting on page 101. Any questions about that policy, Councillor Hull?
Just a question, just for the record. This policy is not popular with DIPTI. Juxtaposition that alongside the increase in density along the corridors, juxtaposition that alongside our encouragement and promotion of the transport orientated developments in about four sites around the city. Is it true that DIPTI will not actually see that as a trade-off or recognise the contribution the council's making to actually meet the 30-year plan, and maybe even exceed the 30-year plan in increase in population in the confines of our city, and yet they're going to push us back with Policy Area 13, where we have simply responded to the cries from many, many streets, from many, many people in regards to trying to retain the amenity and the character of the areas that they so proudly bought into. And not only that, to not have the problem that Mayor Hanna identified with our streets turning into parking lots. So I'd like to know whether that is a reasonable assessment of what we're dealing with in terms of our submission to the government.
Well, sorry, just to check, Councillor Hull, this is the anticipated response of DIPTI, isn't it, that you're talking about? So, look, staff can say what they will, but we don't want speculation. We only want factual information, please.
Through His Worship, the simple answer is we don't know. Until we go out to public consultation, then undertake further review of yield analysis and additional mapping, we don't know, A, how strong a case we can present to the Minister around advocation for the housing diversity DPA as structured, and secondly, whether that will be to the Minister's satisfaction or not. It's simply unknown at this point, and we'll be more informed as this process develops.
Rightio. Yes, Councillor Telfer?
Given that we've worked hard on Policy Area 13, my questions are about the desired character on page 101, where we say the overall character of the built form will gradually improve. Development should seek to promote cohesive landscapes, incorporating designs that are sympathetic to the existing streetscape character, and that buildings of up to two storeys are appropriate, provided that the additional height does not impact on the amenity of adjacent land. And also the last sentence there, buildings that present plain box-like built forms and limited detailing are generally inappropriately. How likely is it that we can work on this desired character, or how much do we get more of the same, even though we have written these criteria into our plan?
Mr. Ms. Hardy?
Through the Mayor, the additional criteria in the desired character will assist the planners, I believe, in future assessment. However, it needs to be acknowledged that the residential code does exist in the Northern Policy Area, and the residential code is the state government's complying criteria for dwellings, which means that dwellings which meet the residential code must be approved, and there is no specific visual design criteria within that code. So whilst our attempt to improve the desired character can't hurt, it doesn't mean that it will prevent all forms of undesirable development.
Councillor Telfer?
Sorry, question. If the development staff work to these objectives, and we have private certifiers that stick to the code, will we then have within Policy 13 a mismatch?
Through His Worship, the answer is yes. As put by Rhiannon, the residential code doesn't include any particular design criteria around the shapes and forms of buildings. It has prescriptive criteria around setbacks to front, side and rear property boundaries. It does include a particular prescriptive measure that talks about a habitable room window having observance of the streetscape. But other than that, there's no other inbuilt design criteria specific to code development, code assessed development. So it is potentially likely we'll get incongruous development outcomes, and it's dependent upon an applicant which development path they wish to take, a merit path or a code assessed development path.
Very well. Councillor Pryor?
Is there any chance the Resi Code is going to get a rewrite?
Through His Worship, I suspect that through the Planning Design Code there might be some collaborative work done with councils. In meetings that I've had with DIPT staff, there has been an acknowledgement that the current prescriptive measures in the code aren't resulting in great development outcomes across the board. So there is at least acknowledgement. Whether there will be a concerted effort for improvement, we'll need to wait and see.
Resi Code. This is a Resi Code. We're showing them how to do it. Councillor Gard.
We had a bit of light discussion last night about the issue that Councillor Hull alluded to a little while ago, and that is what happens if DIPT throws everything out and how might we better give ourselves a good shot of getting what we want, but doing it in a way that appeals to DIPT, or in part of it at least. We discussed the fact that whilst in current times we're not exactly pro the idea of more diversification in the zoning a la medium density in the northern suburbs that we're talking about, that in the future that could change. And so in other words, we're not against it in principle indefinitely, but we want to resist that sort of density now with it up our sleeves in reserve to revisit. Now, everyone has had a chance to sleep on that. I'm interested to know whether that could be a valid insertion to our approach back to DIPT when this goes in, or not.
In other words, is that more a matter for our communication with DIPT as we convey the proposed DPA rather than something technically that's contained in the document? Mr. Kavanagh?
Through His Worship, certainly through the process, we'll engage where we can with DIPT and talk them through Council's approach. So we'll have the supporting documentation that will go out for consultation, which is describing the intent of the DPA and where that's meeting the 30-year plan. I certainly intend having conversations with the Department about what this Council's objectives are in this particular development plan amendment and how we're looking to position ourselves to be in line with the 30-year plan. Now, as was discussed last night and again this evening, that this Council is looking at a strategy whereby it's incremental planned increase in densities. We as staff will need to work with that and with whatever resolution is put by Council tonight. As was discussed last night, we do need to have further conversations with the consultant who's assisting with the drafting of the DPA in preparedness for consultation. We need to hit some key questions around his ability to advocate for what is being decided upon tonight and its alignment with the 30-year plan, because he will need to endorse what is being decided tonight and it being aligned with the 30-year plan before it can be released for public consultation. So we'll need to work through that.
Okay. Shall we move on to the Southern Hills policy area? Now, I think with this one, some context is important. So the Urban Planning Committee, when it first looked at it, in line with the very first strategy decided on to increase density around transport routes, etc., led to a model for the Shiloh Park, Hallett Cove and Merino parts of the council, whereby greater density was focused around the railway line and around the railway stations. The Urban Planning Committee more recently thought what is actually more important is the gradient rather than proximity to the transport corridor. So to the last, or to the special general meeting, a model which was presented, which worked on a 1-in-8 gradient as being significant and restricted subdivision capacity somewhat more above that gradient and was more relaxed in terms of flexibility for subdivision on the slightly flatter areas. At the Special General Council meeting, it arose in debate that a couple of the southern councillors had concerns. And so it's listed in the report here that the Mayor requested an alternative. Now, that, I must stress, is not to suggest any preference or otherwise from the Mayor. It arose purely out of the debate so that we would have fully formed at least two options. One is what came out of the Urban Planning Committee. One is a modified option, which is not as liberal in promoting subdivision in the south as what came out of the committee. So that's one thing I wanted to stress, and that's why you have two options in front of you. The two things I'd like to point out then in your papers, the land gradient maps on page 160 and page 161 can be quite useful to, because that delineates the 1 in 10 gradient, can be useful in getting some picture of the liberalisation of subdivision opportunities. But bearing in mind those opportunities directly relate to the size of current blocks. So if you've got modestly sized current blocks, even though you have subdivision opportunities which are the same as in the north on the old 1940s blocks, it doesn't mean you're going to get more subdivision necessarily, because 600 doesn't go into 350 twice, whereas in the northern plains that happens frequently. So I'm just pointing that out. It's not you cannot compare the northern plains apples with oranges. The other part of your papers that I take you to is pages 28 to 30, and that shows the evolution of the options and the different minimum site areas, the different minimum frontages that have come up so far. In particular, I've just mentioned what is there as option 3 and option 4. So on page 29, you've got what is already a liberalisation promoting subdivision based on that 1 in 8 gradient, and the, I mean, call it a compromise position if you like, but certainly allowing more subdivision but less than the committee recommendation, that appears in option 4 on page 30. And you'll see that the gradients of 1 in 8 and also 1 in 12 bring in a different category. The height, whether it be on option 3 or option 4, is two-storey. So the standard sort of maximum height is two-storey either way. It doesn't go above that. Now, there's one more thing I need to point out about this Southern Hills area. Another innovation that's come out of this process is including essentially everything south of Seacombe Road in the one zone. Previously, and for historical reasons, there's been Cement Hill, there's been Hills, there's been Southern, different ones. This is saying everything south of Seacombe Road is fair game. I say almost everything because there's a couple of exceptions. There's the Hills Face Zone, and I think there's something we've done right down the bottom of Hallett Cove. Worthing Mine is another one. But mind you, they're fairly small blocks anyway that can't really be subdivided much. But Councillor Cation.
the DPA for the Lorenzen site, I guess, would be...
Absolutely. The Seacliff Park development, that's another exception. So, generally speaking, the proposal before you is south of Seacombe Road, all of those suburbs, with those pockets of exceptions for special reasons, would be this part of the same regime, allowing more subdivision, but you've got two options, considerable liberalisation and partial liberalisation, if you like. But certainly this has come out of the message we've got from
Mr.
the community.
Mayor, I don't
so order,
like
order.
Liberalisation.
Order. There is... The motivation for this is what we've heard from at least some of the community through councillors, that there is an appetite for more subdivision in the southern part of the city. So we are still in the phase where standing orders are suspended. I'm interested to hear from members which of those two options is preferred. Let's just quickly go around the table, because that will... Well, you can pass or make a comment as you wish. Councillor Kerry? Yep, Councillor Telfer?
I am a councillor for the Darlington area, which has the three grades or three levels, and I'll expand on that.
Councillor Hutchinson?
Oh, I'll support option three.
Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I support some of the southern councillors in option four.
Councillor Powell?
Well, I was going to say before, liberalisation is not a terminology that...
Relaxation might be more your thing.
Yeah, thank you. I think I've been saying all through this process, members might remember, and the terms that I used, the Mayor summed it up the other night, what is it, don't wish for what you hope for, or...
Be careful what you wish for.
Be careful what you wish for.
Struggling
that's,
with.
Yes. That's it. I always struggle with that. Because have a look what's happened down here.
So you're a four, are you?
I'm 4-4. Thank
four,
you.
4-4. Councillor Westwood, comment or election?
Yes, generally I do like the principle of owners of properties doing what they want as long as they don't hurt anybody. So if they want to chop their property up to the minimum size, I guess I have to side with that. The one objection, I suppose, or caution I have is that the suburbs might look rather ugly once everything's chopped up as much as possible, but I have to go with the principle of as much freedom as possible for owners of properties.
Three is free. Councillor Byron?
Option four.
Councillor Blescu?
Look, I think option four is better, but I guess one of my concerns, what I've seen in the northern area, is the row dwellings, and I'd like to have whatever we can to actually discourage these row dwellings, especially in areas where people aren't used to them, and that's the problem. They've evolved over time in some of the eastern suburbs, and people... You know, they're used to smaller blocks that can deal with it. But as these evolve, they cause a lot of trouble. I'm aware of this issue causing a fair bit of trouble in one area in the ward in particular. So I don't support, I think, even the road dwellings in number four, even though that's the option I support, I think that's too little. I also think that our plans need to, and that's probably something at a policy level, maybe another level of government, is we need to look at the whole area. We can subdivide into four. I can put in four road dwellings. As long as there's enough room for either plan, I don't need to look at what's around that area. I think we need to. I think we need to with even, you know, with two or three subdivisions. So a lot of these things, and we need to advocate for this because as we allow these developments that cause issues in our community, not only do we have to pay to deal with and sometimes, you know, try to remedy these issues, but also the community thinks that every time there's a subdivision, we get, council as a whole rubs their hands in glee for getting more money from rates. and that's the perception out there. Yeah. So,
Councillor, I might ask staff for comment, but what's your particular concern with road dwellings in the southern half of the city?
I think it's really the placement. So if there's somewhere flat, if it's there'll be issues as far as accessibility and parking. And what I'm afraid of is that we'll have issues with parking, because if one of the allotted spaces out of two is a garage, it'll be someone's home gym or someone's storage area. And I would like to see the sorts of developments that discourage that sort of use for the allocated parking spots, and possibly more parking spots. And I guess the way to do it, a bit of a blunt tool, is to increase the frontages on road dwellings. So instead of it being a one-bedroom, one-room, one garage, it'll be two garages, a double garage, and people can park two cars in front of them. Because that's the demographic. This is the people that are moving into that area. In 10, 20 years, we may not have as many cars, but this is who wants these areas, and especially in the south. In the south, there is going to be a lot more cars, especially Shadow Park and Trot Park, because there is no transport there. Those houses do not appreciate because there is no transport. They're vulnerable to interest rate rises, a whole lot of stuff, petrol price rises, because the transport there is pretty dismal. So everyone in that house, as soon as they're able, needs a car. And who's going to move into these houses? It's going to be families.
Sounds like parking is the main theme there.
It will, and it's...
Remember, Councillor, we're not in debate yet.
I know. Parking's a theme.
All right. Staff response, please.
Yep, through the Mayor. The options before you, all four options, will increase the minimum site dimensions for road dwellings in the southern area. So at present, the Southern Policy Area 18 prescribes a minimum site area of 280 square metres and an 8-metre frontage for a road dwelling. In the options before you, assuming the site is flat, that minimum dimension goes up to 300 square metres with a 9-metre frontage. So it will be a bit more restrictive in terms of which sites could be developed for road dwellings. It also means that sites upon where a road dwelling could be developed will have a greater frontage width to allow for more on-street car parking. The car parking rates aren't proposed to change for road dwellings in this DPA, so at present we prescribe a minimum of 2 on-site car parks for a dwelling that has 3 or less bedrooms, or 3 on-site car parks where a dwelling has 4 or more bedrooms. And those provisions are greater than what's prescribed in the residential code, so we feel that they're sufficient in this instance.
So, Councillor Valescu, you would rather, based on the options before you for the southern areas, you would rather have change than no change, and in terms of options 3 and 4, which I've highlighted, you'd rather have option 4 rather than option 3, because it's more restrictive on road dwellings.
I'm curious whether changing road dwellings to a minimum of 9 metres would have, because I guess 2 metres, that's almost an extra car if you're having a few. So between 2, that's 4 metres, you will fit a car. So I'm just wondering whether that's an option, whether that'll be...
I think it might be an option for you to move an amendment if you wish to later on, but I'll just ask for comment from Ms Hardy or Mr Kapner.
Through His Worship, the increased frontage does, I guess, two things. Number one, it does pick up an additional 4 metres of on-street parking where there might be two allotments side by side that are divided for road dwellings, but it also potentially decreases the number of allotments that have the physical measurements to actually be divided in the first place. So at last night's information session, we were talking about developing some maps, which we haven't had sufficient time to do as yet, but those maps would have the contours overlaid with the allotment size data. From that, we can then highlight some blue dots on that map to show, based on the data table, how many allotments could actually be divided. So we'll be more informed once we have that.
Yes, I'm an option four man now, and I do appreciate the input of the Mayor on I think a lot of insight in that summary position representative of the evolutions on the urban planning and other meetings. Definitely, I think it's a horses for courses situation where the people of Marino in particular, so I'm using that as a representation of other areas, I think will be very, very happy to be moving away from the Hills Face zoning that they currently face, which is pretty pretty brutal in this day and age, in one way, that is. However, the people that live in the higher pitched areas of Marino, south of Jervois Terrace in particular, I think are prepared to understand that there will be greater difficulty in property division, or that there might be. It will be interesting to see how public consultation goes on this, and also the mapping that Mr. Catanar is referring to down the track. That should be quite enlightening. But I see option four under point four as the way to go. I think it will be generous to most parties. I also make the notation that speaking of high pitch and views, with 600 residences proposed for the Lorenzen site, which we now know is red hot to go, there's going to be a particular market for the smaller dwelling with a view there in itself, which will perhaps dilute the value of dividing merrily up the hill into much smaller allotments. So I think that's part of the equation that we should be thinking about, because that is not, that's something like 25% increase in the proposed, or more than that, I'm thinking of dwelling numbers, so it's probably 30 to 40% increase in population of that Marino area in that small Seacliff Park spot. So, yep, option four for me.
Thank you. Right, well, that, I haven't really heard anyone make the case out for going back to separate areas south of Seacombe Road. So that would suggest the existing motion for the first paragraph, the first option there, but with option four instead of option two being an appropriate motion to reflect that those remarks. So let's keep going. We've done most of it. The suburban activity node zone. So everyone understands, looking at Appendix 13, we're talking about substantially increased density around shopping centres and transport corridors, to put it simply. Can I have a brief overview from staff on that point, please?
Through the Mayor, the suburban activity node zone has evolved through various meetings of the Urban Planning Committee. They reviewed a couple of different zone modules from the State Planning Policy Library, and this zone was considered most appropriate for the intended outcomes, which is higher density, medium rise development around our major activity centres and around public transport, but predominantly rail transport. So what you have before you is a proposed suburban activity node zone around Westfield Marion and also linking to Oaklands Crossing. It also extends up the train and tram lines linking to Castle Plaza, and it extends down Sturt Road linking to the Tonsley Innovation Precinct. So just in terms of the envisaged development outcomes, we'd be looking at up to 6 storeys around Westfield with a transition area surrounding it of a maximum 3 storeys. In all the remaining areas, it would be a maximum of 4 storeys. There are building interface provisions to ensure that where a site is adjacent a lower density residential zone, it needs to have transitional built form, so to step down in height as it gets closer to existing lower density dwellings.
Now, does anyone have any questions about that, Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, I just have to ask the question that if we don't take the guidance of the staff on this one, will we be providing appropriate stewardship as a body, as a governance body, to set our community up to succeed in terms of economic development, to actually succeed in capacity, given the way that our area is developing? Mr. Mayor, I think I've raised this before. This is the biggest review of planning in the history of the city. The biggest. From top to bottom, no area left untouched. And this is the standout one. This is the one that the press report on. Mainly because of the height of the buildings. But if we actually... the question is, if we actually hold back on this with this rare opportunity, will we actually compromise our city going forward in terms of our kids and grandkids getting jobs?
Well, this is sounding more like a political contribution rather than a question for planners.
I'm always contributing, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
I still have that question.
What is the question?
Well, the question is, I think it's important for the staff to advise us of the consequences of us not doing things, and I keep raising that, and I'd like to know what are the consequences of us not supporting this in terms of all the things I just mentioned.
Oh, over to staff. Mr. Kattner.
Through his worship, the challenge will be demonstrating that this DPA is in alignment with the 30-year plan and the planning strategy. That is a challenge before administration. As outlined earlier, that is a conversation we'll be having with the consultant who's assisting us with the development of the DPA for consultation. So that is a challenge. I'll be quite clear in that. There is a possibility that not including that sort of missing middle, as it's often described, may not align this DPA with the planning strategy.
Very well. If there are no other questions, we'll move on. So the urban corridor zone. Could I have just a brief overview of that, please?
So the proposed urban corridor zone is to be applied along Marion Road. So the intention of the DPA when we submitted the SOI over a year ago was to consolidate the number of zones along Marion Road to facilitate more integrated outcomes. So at the moment, the majority of Marion Road has pocket zoning between residential zone and commercial zone. So this is looking to introduce a single mixed-use zone along the whole of Marion Road corridor. Following further investigation and liaison with DIPTY staff, we've reviewed the building heights along Marion Road, so it would be limited to 3 storeys, but certain key sites have been selected where there would be a maximum 4 to 6 storeys. So the intention of that policy mechanism would to be to encourage development of those key sites as a priority and in a more integrated manner.
Thank you. Now, I've got a question, it might have been more relevant to the suburban activity node zone, but I notice Appendix 12. Now, that's something that suggests, that looks to me like a departure from the Urban Planning Committee recommendations, where there's a suggestion of an interface zone between the suburban activity node zone and other areas, but which in fact has the effect of encroaching upon those adjacent areas. Now, can you clarify where does... I can't see how that Appendix 12 relates to the paragraphs 5 or 6 that we have there, so how does that fit in?
Through the Mayor, Appendix 12 is an analysis of interface issues. That the outcome of that report has shaped the draft policy that's in Appendix 13 of your agendas. The report in Appendix 12 was considered by the Urban Planning Committee. There were four options in there in dealing with how to handle interface in the best manner and achieve the most positive outcomes, both in terms of development potential and preserving the amenity of existing lower density residential areas. And the Urban Planning Committee decided on option 4 of that report, and that's reflected in the draft policy, which relates to resolution number 5.
Right, so I think it's quite important for members, because certainly don't want us to do anything inadvertent, but I draw members' attentions to pages 174 through to 181 of the agenda. When I see, of course it's much easier to appreciate this visually, but when I see on page 177, for example, if that grading from 4 storeys down to 3, down to 2, down to 1 is occurring within a proposed suburban activity node zone, that's something I'm comfortable with, and I know that at least some other members would be comfortable with. When I see the illustration on page 179, it looks as if the suburban activity node zone is 4 storeys, but then it encroaches on the adjacent area to go down 3, 2 and 1. So quite possibly I'm misreading that, but can that be clarified, please?
Through His Worship, your summarisation of that is correct. So the map on page 179 shows that all of the zone will permit up to 4 storeys, with a transition zone sitting adjacent, providing for 3, 2 and 1 storeys. Whereas the map on page 177 shows that transition being provided entirely within the zone.
So don't members have a choice to face here? I mean, in how have you put to us the question of which one we prefer tonight?
Sorry, through the Mayor, that decision was considered by the Urban Planning Committee, and they resolved to proceed with the diagram on page 182. So the diagrams on page 179 and 177 that you're referring to were dismissed.
Ah, right. Thank you. Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, the sites that were nominated along Marion Road, was there 5 of those that we put forward?
Yes, that's correct.
And is that a rolling 5, or is that just 5 that are going to disappear once we develop them? So let's say we develop, or people develop 2 in the next year, are we going to pick 2 more key sites to then roll on?
Through the Mayor, I think that's a good question. Ordinarily, we would say that would be reviewed in a further development plan amendment, but given the evolution to a new planning system, we're not sure what mechanism the policy review would take. It may be the case that the new zone and key sites are incorporated into the planning and design code, but given that it's all speculative at this stage, I don't think we can really say for certain.
Yeah, true, but we have a list of more than 5 that we could include and say the top 5 are on until... I mean, we could write that into the policy, I guess, if we really wanted to.
We could do, but you'll see in the analysis in appendix number 14, there are some issues with the other 5 sites that were dismissed.
So if I could take members to page 197, that's the best illustration perhaps of what we're talking about. So with Marion Road, this was a classic case where council, according to its initial premises, was willing to make that a high density corridor virtually, but DIPT themselves have come back and said, no, you're better off choosing out key sites that are more suitable for high level development rather than having it cut and picked all the way along Marion Road. So I suggest staff have done a good job in sorting out the most appropriate sites for that. It's probably not all that clear from the map which ones have been chosen, but on the following page there is a table, site prioritisation, and a list of the top six sites. So I'd ask Ms Hardy, is that the case then that those top six sites on page 199, they're the ones where the urban corridor zone is
That was just narrowing it down. The final five sites are on page 219 and illustrated on the map on page 220.
Oh, now you're catching me out. Maybe I didn't read that far. So thank you for that. Right, page 220, yes, the six sites? No, five sites. They just have numbers 2, 4, 5, 6 and 10. Right. The one question I had about that was the reference in the legend to the Marion Historic Village High Street. I thought council had previously resolved not to proceed with that.
Yes, that is correct. This report was considered by the Urban Planning Committee at a time where the High Street hadn't been resolved as yet, so certainly on all future maps that High Street would no longer be visible.
Oh, thanks for the clarification. Yep. Right, so Councillor Gard was next, then Councillor Hull.
Thanks, Your Worship. Just briefly, I know it's been aired on the airwaves more than once that there's likely to be significant displacement, inverted commas, one day from the north-south corridor area of South Road, particularly the stretch between the tram line and Tonsley. It's very difficult to predict just when that sort of displacement might begin to occur, but my thought was that it could be as early as 4 years' time, say. Is it likely that we'll be able to include those businesses in our public consultation, like actively consult them in public consultation, as to their possible demands upon the Marion Road region? Because I do recall it being said that Marion Road would be very high on the list of alternatives to a lot of those businesses because it wouldn't be taking them out of their marketing zone, if you like, distribution zones. And I think most businesses, particularly that sort of small industry type of establishment, is loath to go very far from if they're to be displaced.
Question about the consultation in particular. Yeah, thanks.
Through His Worship, we're currently working through the consultation strategy, which will include the Government Gazette or notice, also advertisements in the local messenger and the advertiser, also a mail out to City of Marion residents as well, so inviting them, informing them of the DPA and inviting them to submit comments.
Councillor Hull.
Mr Mayor, sometimes when the media reports on these endeavours, and they already have, it actually can be a handy heads up. It's a good reconnaissance sometimes as to what the community sentiments are. So I have two questions. Once again, referring to the media, front page not that long ago, Marion Hotel, the Hurley Group, deciding to go ahead with a multi-storey development. Did that news in any way come about by virtue of the Hurley Group becoming aware of the City of Marion's endeavours. In fact, they're listed here tonight in the public document, going ahead to allow such development in that area.
Might have been the other way around. Ms. Hardy?
Through the Mayor, it's my understanding that that the developer had intentions to redevelop that site before we had considered it in this Marion Road corridor analysis.
Right, but the developer would have got some idea of what the council's intentions were in terms of height and scale.
I'm not exactly sure of the timing of their redevelopment proposal, but it's my understanding that it was before this report was made public.
Right. So the critical
procedural motion. Critical. Sorry. We're running out of time, Councillor. Sorry.
Critical question I've got is that once again with the media that's already happened about what we're proposing, it's a public document tonight. Has there been any feedback? Have you picked up any sentiments apart from Diptai's pushback about what's being proposed? It'd be interesting to know what the staff have heard from our community.
Through His Worship, not to our knowledge, have any members of staff been contacted with any questions about the directions of this DPA at this point in time?
Councillor Telford, did you want to move an extension of time to deal with this item and the Ombudsman's report item? Is that seconded? Councillor Pryor? All those in favour? All those against? Carried by a majority. Thank you. So please go on. Yes.
I'm keen that we add a little piece right up the beginning of the whole list of motions, so that we are acknowledging that we are doing this and working on the heights on our different corridors because of the 30-year plan imperative. So my wording is that recognising the requirements to align the development plans of the City of Marion with the South Australian Government 30-year plan, Council, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, so the form of wording might be that council notes, etc.
We wouldn't do all this form of type. We didn't have to.
Yes, very good point. So we can do that. Just on the point about the Marion Hotel, they're actually not one of the key sites as recommended by staff, are they? They are. On, so page 220, is it number 5, is it? Oh, number 2, down there, Mitchell Park. Yes, of course it is. Sorry. Should have brought the magnifying glasses tonight. We have pretty well got through it. Obviously, we need to extend the budget to allow for the consultation. One other thing that I would suggest we add, and I'd like staff's advice on this, is the start date for public consultation. We've had in informal discussions, I've heard, I think, the September, the about the Monday in the middle of September. Was it, or was it the about the 16th of September? But frankly, we can't push it much beyond that.
Through the Chair, we're still working through just finalising that date. We understand we need to start it ASAP, so we're just working through the final date, and those details will be brought through to the 12th of the special council meeting when the DPEA is brought back.
If there is one, but okay. Quite frankly, how can we start it later than that?
Through His Worship, we had informally discussed previously a commencement date for public consultation on the 18th. But this being a moving project, we've now engaged the communications department and working through the common strategy. we can provide a tentative commitment to the 18th, but until we work through that comms strategy with them in the remaining days of this week, we can't give a 100% certainty that it will commence on the 18th. It will be around that date. So I would expect the consultation to start either on the 18th or within 5 business days of that date.
Well, we've got Mr. Clark in the room. I mean, he is the communications strategist par excellence. So what does he have? I mean, what is he holding things up? Is that what you're saying, Mr. Kapner?
Absolutely not, Your Worship.
I think we should call him up to defend himself. Mr. Clark?
Through the Chair, at this stage we are working for the actual details of when it could start. We're going to be reliant on two things: one, designers, and also the printing and actual distribution to be able to go out as well. So we think the 18th may be a little bit too, I suppose, too close. So we think more like the 25th at the start. Excuse me.
The problem with that, of course, is at the other end we've got a 1st of December deadline. Legally, we can advertise in the Messenger and the Advertiser. We can plan a public meeting during the consultation process. There's no mandatory requirement that we have a postcard in every letterbox on the first day, is there? So why couldn't we commence the process and have those, well, you know, whatever it's going to be, brochures or postcards, hitting letterboxes in week one or two into the phase.
Through Your Worship, that is correct. It's a statutory requirement to issue a gazettal notice, advertise in the Advertiser and Messenger, and also hold a public meeting at the end of the consultation period. So the mail-out could occur in the weeks after the gazettal notice is done.
I really don't want to be uncharitable here, but Council has an opportunity to actually fix a target date and then we run with it. And, you know, in some items in the past there has been slippage, and we can't afford slippage with this one. So that's why, well, it's up to members. We're still, believe it or not, with standing orders suspended. What do members think? I mean, do we bang a date in there, or let it be decided later?
They put a date on it, Mr. Mayor. It's time critical. It's not an unimportant proposal.
Help me out here, members. Just a quick show of hands. If you think we should fix a date in about that time frame, about the third week of September, raise your hand. Otherwise, don't raise your hand. So I think most people do. So the 18th being the Wednesday, is there anything special about that? That was really just to, you know, a quick calculation to give us more or less enough time. Is that it, Mr. Kapner?
Through His Worship, the 18th is Monday, the 18th of September. Yes.
Oh, I must have been. I don't know what I was doing. But that's probably a fair target to go for then. You know, if council is minded to set such a date, Councillor Pryor.
So what if we set the 18th? What absolutely has to happen on the 18th? Is the gazetting in the papers?
Through His Worship, gazettal and advertisements in Advertiser and Messenger. That's it.
And that's 3 weeks away. So. Four, yeah, nearly just under 4 weeks away. Is it? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Just under 4 weeks. So that sounds achievable to us simple folk. I mean, we realise that you want to have a lot of background material prepared by then. We don't want to have the ad in the Messenger and then people phoning up and staff having to say, look, we don't know what the hell's going on. But the sort of thing that I'll just let councillors know, the sort of thing I was informally talking to Mr. Katnar about was, for example, having a general mail out, goes out to all the residences and businesses, on the website, the full picture, but on the website there would also be a suburb by suburb diagram, which would help people with their local area. And if people didn't have the internet and they had the mail out, they could phone in and say, send me the suburb version for my suburb. So cover it in that way. It may not all happen on day one, but if there's at least a substantial internet presence on day one and a reasonable sort of advertising, it would kick it off well. Any final comments before? So can we add then to the motions? You've got that there. Thank you very much. That looks good. Well, sorry. The motion is that council, so leave out the word administration and just make that commences, because that's how it happens. Yep. All right. Now, one more motion that's been suggested by the manager governance, and that is we don't want to get to the situation at the end of November or December, whereby we come to a meeting and everybody excuses themselves. That would be silly, wouldn't it? There's a capacity under the Local Government Act for us to write to the minister and say, hey, we're working on something that's going to affect everybody. Give us an exemption so we don't have to worry about this stupid conflict of interest thing in this particular case, and we can just all get on and take part in the debate. So I know I'm paraphrasing, but that would be a useful thing, I suggest to you, to include. If it doesn't happen, we can work around it, but it would be helpful. So, members, I think we've been through all the issues. So I resume standing orders and I leave it to Councillor Pryor to move if he wishes to. Otherwise, Councillor Telfer. Councillor Telfer is also very passionate about it, so leave it to Councillor Telfer, seconded Councillor Pryor. Councillor Telfer, away you go.
Well, we're representatives of a community, and we have, as a group, slogged away to come up with something that's worth letting our community have a look at it. They will respond. They will have a variety of viewpoints when it goes out for 2 months' consultation, and we look forward to those responses. We, in good faith, have worked to come up with a comprehensive plan that replies to the South Australian Government 30-year plan. And we have some new innovations, particularly, I think, the Marion Plains policy area that has better design criteria, and the Southern Hills policy area. In representing Darlington, at the bottom I've got Grace Street, which is fairly flat, and I can see that 1 in 12 might fit that, and there we have the same thing as the Marion policy area. But halfway up the hill, up near Stella Street, it's a bit slopier. It would come into that middle criteria, and because it does, it would have the 400, I think it is, 450. But right at the top, at Eagles Rise, it's not appropriate to have road dwellings close together, or to have things that are squashed together, impacting on the amenity of the people that live there. And those people have areas of 600 square metres for their detached dwellings. All of those were the detached dwellings. So I think we've got an innovative plan, and I look forward to the community responding.
Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with what Councillor Telfer said. I make no bones about it. This has been one of the most complicated things that I've encountered on council, and by a long street, comfortably. I think that through the Urban Planning Committee and through the staff we've come out with a pretty good plan, and I think the community will be happy with it. I'm really keen to see the feedback or hear the feedback. And to anyone listening to these minutes or this recording, get on the internet, get on the phone, tell us what you think. We want to know. And just in wrapping up, I'm going to give the staff a huge rap here. Like, they have done a fantastic job. I understand that there's a few. Okay, there's really only one member who's pretty prickly. That's probably me. Oh, sorry. Okay, maybe there's a couple of members who are a bit prickly on this. Look, they've done everything they can to work with what guidance we've given them. I really can't say that enough about the staff, and I really want them to just push till the end, and let's try and get this across the line. Let's see how it goes, and we can always amend it one day in the future if someone doesn't do it for us. So, yeah, thanks, guys and girls.
Any others? Councillor? Question? Maximum of three. Go ahead.
At the end of this deadline that we've set for the staff, would it be in order that by resolution that we actually give those staff 2 days off on full pay as a indication of our appreciation?
That's a question, but we could perhaps make a recommendation to the Chief Executive, but I don't know that we would get involved directly in employment matters to that extent. I invite you to take up that suggestion with the Chief Executive between meetings. Any others? Then I will put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? Carried by majority. I call a division. All those in favour, please stand in your place. Councillors Kerry, Telfer, Hutchinson, Pryor, Hull, Westwood, Byram, Valescu and Gard. Those against is Councillor Appleby. No casting vote, so I don't have to say anything more. For those who are listening, I do just want to point out that the motions tonight need to be taken into account with motions passed at the previous two General Council meetings. The sum of those motions has given staff everything they need to complete the draft DPA for consultation. So I think that reference point might be useful. I would like to add my commendation to Councillor Pryor's remarks. Once we made it clear that Council was absolutely determined to meet the very tight deadline given to us by the Minister for Planning, staff really have pulled out all stops. They've done exceptionally well to prepare this enormous volume of work in a very short space of time. I really think it is a heroic effort. So thank you very much. And so we go to the final item of the evening, the Ombudsman report in relation to Mr. Scull. The two salient points being that there was clearly an error in procedure. I do note that the Ombudsman made a point that Mr. Scull had acted in good faith. Everyone can read the report for details. The motion, as recommended by staff, covers the two points of recommendation of the Ombudsman. So that's the reason they are there. The Ombudsman said, fix these two things up. The reason that there's a motion drafted for the Mayor to write to the Ombudsman is that whenever there is such a report, the Council has 2 months essentially to write back to the Ombudsman saying, what are you doing about it, where an error has been uncovered. So that's probably the minimum that one could say. I know that I would also like to say that we've had a parking services review
this year, which in my view has been inadequate, and I've had ongoing discussions. Others perhaps have had ongoing discussions with management about that. And we haven't yet got to the end point where we have a comprehensive set of recommendations about how to improve management of the unit and in particular the procedures that need to be followed. So it's a work in progress. I think the Ombudsman should be advised of that as well. But, you know, we'll see what Council makes of it. Councillor Hull.
Move the recommendations as printed on page 549. Mr Mayor, I feel that this needs to go to the Centre for Lessons Learnt. I'm sure it has. I actually had, and Councillor Pryor had, one referred to us recently about a parking fine in Westfield Marion. Notified Councillor Pryor, I referred it on to Sharon Perrin and asked for the review process to take effect. And I really think that's the easy way of dealing with it. You don't have to then get involved in judgments and over to them. In moving this motion, I've got to say, as a former executive member of Neighbourhood Watch at a state level, and I currently am an area coordinator for Neighbourhood Watch, I am particularly concerned about the view that you can go along to a Neighbourhood Watch meeting and have any fine considered. Neighbourhood Not Watch is not for
order.
That.
I have to call you to order there because that is not what the Ombudsman report is suggesting. Not really.
But it's what I'm suggesting. As a community leader, Mr. Mayor, I'm expressing that. I'd like the community to know that that's not what it's all about.
Order. I think everyone agrees that you don't go along to Neighbourhood Watch meetings to get fines waived. But all I'm saying is, in a sense, that's not relevant because that's not what the Ombudsman's report is criticising.
Well, be it that the Ombudsman's made his findings, I would like to just make that contribution as something I've observed in the process. The community needs to know. Don't come along to my Neighbourhood Watch meeting and raise the issue of fines of any description. I'm not interested. It's not the place for it to happen. And I know Neighbourhood Watch, Watch SA executive would have a very dim view of this. So I'm happy to move the recommendation.
Councillor Valescu.
I think I just want to clarify, if I can, with leave of the meeting.
Councillor seeks leave to make a personal explanation. Is leave granted? There being no objection, leave is
Thank
granted.
You. I think whilst I agree that Councillor Hull, you know, you go to Neighbourhood Watch to participate in Neighbourhood Watch and nothing else. If you are there as a regular participant and you see someone from a body which you want to explore the issue further, then that's what people did. So I think it is lessons learnt, but I don't think it's fair in this instance to say that the person just came for that and to doubt their sincerity to be part of Neighbourhood Watch and what they contribute to the community, much like what Councillor Hull and other people do.
All right. Now, is the motion seconded? Councillor Gard, to speak.
Yes, I think this is one of those areas where we should be recording as elected members that we recognise, notwithstanding the expertise of the Ombudsman in the issue, that we recognise that the intent of the CEO was genuine and valiant, I think it should also be underlined. It's reported but not emphasised in the report that the CEO asked a question of the staff member and the staff member accepted that communication as a question. Two question marks appeared in the very short communique of the CEO. Now, to me, 10 times out of 10, I would read that as a question. It was a form of expression put very succinctly. So I think those points should be recorded somewhere in the minute, because as time passes, these things can bring on somewhat of a sinister appearance, which would be most unfair if that were allowed. So in seconding it, that's what I recommend.
Thank you. It is certainly a cautionary tale for every elected member here and on other councils. There is a process for dealing with expiation notices. I don't think it has been broadly communicated to us as elected members. There is something on the website that has been inaccurate for a long period. So it's easy enough to make a mistake. And with the Council of Perfection, which the Ombudsman enjoys, it's easy to find the flaws. But certainly it puts us all on notice that one has to be extremely gingerly careful with any requests for expiation notices to be reviewed. They get sent straight off, probably without comment, ideally, to the decision maker responsible within council, and then one awaits the result. So, any further debate? Councillor Bilescu.
I want to say that, because I do get to mention this, in my role as councillor, I assisted a constituent to draft a letter appealing an expiation notice at their request. My conduct was appropriate at all times.
Yeah, I think we mixed up the debate and the personal explanation. I'm not worried about that. Councillor Hull, anything to close the debate?
Quickly, in terms of the lady parking in the bike lane, I don't know whether the organisation's put enough weight on the fact that we did have an obstructed bike lane, and that would have placed cyclists at risk who were trying to go around that vehicle. So, you know, we actually are a pro cycling council. Turning our blind eye to people parking in bikeways for whatever reason, if they've broken down there, fair enough. But the reasons, as described in this report, in my opinion, do not allow anybody, for those reasons at least, to place cyclists at risk. So I just want to underline that as well.
All those in favour, raise your hand. It's carried unanimously. Thank you, and I declare the meeting closed.